WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Before Randy Cohn got a job as a writer on The David Letterman Show, he was a freelance magazine writer. In the 6 years he's worked for Letterman, he's come up with such ideas as the Monkey Cam, the Overdub Show, and the 360-degree Rotation Show. All the while, he's continued to write short fiction for such magazines as The New Yorker and Harper's. He's collected some of his stories in a new book called Diary of a Flying Man. But I wanted to know about the exciting life of a TV comic writer.
Every day you go into your office, it looks just like a tedious desk job. And you drink coffee and you read the paper and avoid actually doing your work as long as you can. Then anxiety kicks in and you just try to come up with ideas that Dave can do on the show.
What's an idea you came up with this week that's going to be on?
I ran across a press kit for the Corey Haim, a young actor, very popular with the young people. He had just released his new video called Me, Myself, and I. It managed to combine fatuity and egomania in ideal proportions for humor, I thought, and called up the press agent, got a copy of the Corey Haim tape, pulled off the most ludicrous clips where Corey kind of lounges on a white sofa and petulantly describes his likes and dislikes, Corey on kissing, Corey on baseball. He likes both of them, by the way. And I'll show these to Dave, and Dave seemed amused, and he'll run them from time to time on the show, probably Friday.
So he's going to actually run the clips from the video?
Yeah, just Corey lounging on the couch. I think the way it will work is Dave will say, well, yeah, but I wonder what Corey would think about that. And we'll just see a little of it, and it will run without comment. And I think it's that Dave's attitude is so clear to our viewers that it will slather on just the proper dose of irony so that Corey will be really, really sorry he ever made this tape, and or maybe delighted. I don't know. But I do think it will run without comment so that there's very little possibility of litigation in this.
The thing that you just described with the Corey Haim tapes,
yes.
That's an idea, right? Do you
yes.
write lines for Letterman, or do you present him with a concept?
There's surprisingly little writing in any sense that anyone would recognize, in the sense of the deft use of language on the show. The pieces I've been most successful with, and I think the pieces that the show does the best, are giving Dave a situation in which he can be incredibly amusing. Monkey Cam comes to mind, mm-hmm. a piece of mine that I was endlessly delighted with. We had a chimpanzee named Zippy, as I believe they're all named Zippy, it's some sort of federal law, on whom we'd placed a tiny micro camera and microwave relay equipment so that Zippy could operate the camera. Zippy could telecast the entire show, and he was permitted to range free in the studio for an entire show.
How did all of this get started? The thrill cam, the monkey cam. There's so much playing around with cameras on the show.
I think a joke that Dave is real funny about is making a big deal out of a small thing.
Mm-hmm.
The notion of slathering on incredible technological sophistication to do a show as trivial as ours, which I think the underlying joke from Dave's point of view is that isn't that what all TV is? You know, enormous squandering of technical resources.
Mm-hmm. Now, something else that's been a running theme for the past few years is squashing things and dropping things off tall buildings. This has been going on a long time. How did that get started?
It has. There's an element of the 12-year-old boy sensibility.
Uh-huh.
Things that a very smart but very unsophisticated kid would think was cool. And it just runs through the show. I don't know how to explain it beyond that. I did a piece like this.
What did you do?
A couple of weeks ago, we went out to a wrecking yard in New Jersey and dropped a 3,000-pound block on a lot of stuff. It's childish. It's idiotic. It's destructive. It's mindless. And it just seemed incredibly funny. I don't know why.
Did it work on the show?
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. We had really, really good slow motion so that when you dropped a 3,000-pound block on a pyramid of GE fluorescent tubes, it was just unbelievably lovely. Do you remember the last 3 minutes of Zabriskie Point?
Yeah.
When they blew
everything
up?
Everything blows up in slow motion.
Yeah. Icons of consumer culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's as if the last 3 minutes of Zabriskie Point were the only good part of that movie, and that's what we decided to make our show about.
Mm-hmm.
It's our sort of homage to Antonioni.
Now, GE owns NBC now.
So they do.
And there's always little jokes about GE on the show. Like, for instance, crushing the light bulbs. Of course, it's not exactly like hard-hitting commentary on corporate culture or, you know, or conglomerates or anything like that. But how does GE react to it? Are there limits that are set for you the network executives?
No, they're not. And that's, I think, a little disturbing. It's certainly disturbing to me, and it's disturbing, I think, to Dave. I don't want to presume to speak too much for him about this, but if there were limits, it would mean that what we were doing was in some sense subversive and disturbed them. And there are not limits, and I'm afraid the effect of these jokes is perhaps to humanize them and to make them appear cute, and what good guys they are, what sense of humor they have. It's a kind of American tradition of complaining about your boss, but it's largely contentless. Don't you think? I mean, we do make jokes about the lack of safety of General Electric products, and we do make jokes about GE as defense contractor, GE as builder of nuclear power plants or unreliable jet engines. But I don't think they're subversive.
Were you going to try it out sometime, do something that would truly be subversive and see what kind of reaction you get, if any?
Not my call.
Right.
Dave's call.
Letterman always reacts to viewer mail. And you see the letter on the screen, and the weird parts are kind of highlighted. And he reads it out loud, and then there's often a little fantasy that's enacted afterwards in response to the letter. Are those always real letters?
Yeah, they're always real letters. And no one believes it, and no one will ever believe it. It seems an insoluble problem that it's a comedy show, and it lacks credibility. Perhaps our lack of credibility is our greatest asset. I wish the president had the same lack of credibility. It would make him a better person. But the letters are all real, yeah.
One of the things you did with viewer mail was to have the Red Army Chorus sing a viewer mail theme.
It was a peace of mind to commission Henry Mancini to compose the lovely and moving theme to viewer mail, and it's wonderful. It's stirring. It makes viewer mail seem almost as if it were actually worth watching. And when I read that the Red Army Chorus was going to come to America, we arranged to have them come and sing the theme to viewer mail. And I felt if we could truly trivialize a significant event in contemporary political life, the opening of relations between East and West, the end of the Cold War, if we could make it truly trivial, we would have lived up to the standard set by network news.
Do you ever worry about an overdose of irony?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Do you ever worry about getting too ironic, dwelling on the trivial for, you know, like having a lot of fun with trivial things, but for a really long time?
Well, I'm not so sure. I think that the Red Army joke was a trivial joke.
Uh-huh.
I think maybe the Red Army joke was a pretty serious joke. I mean, I'm not sure how to talk about it without sounding unbelievably pompous. But I thought the Red Army joke was a smart and serious joke about the way television, particularly television news, has the capacity to trivialize the most significant events of the day.
Was the Red Army Chorus in on the joke? Did they
yes,
know what they were saying?
They were really wonderful. It's humor from the Urals. It's they were given the lyrics and the music to the Mancini theme, and it was their idea to do a sort of medley from a song they sing called Kalinka that would segue into the viewer mail theme and then back to Kalinka. That was their notion, and it was very funny. It worked really well, and it was conceived by them to be funny. They were great.
Mm-hmm. Where are you while the show is actually being recorded?
In the makeup room, about 6 feet away from the studio. This is where we're invited to hang out, and this is where you get the only touch of show business glamour, that you're upstairs working in an office all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like an office job. It doesn't seem like, there aren't a lot of people running around the halls saying wacky things. There aren't people playing jokes. It's a kind of a serious and reserved group of people. There's a sort of level, a constant undertone of anxiety, a sense of having to get things done by that day for that show. But at 5:30, you go downstairs and there are trained circus animals and glamorous actresses, and it's wonderful.
I'm sure you don't need to be writing for magazines to supplement your income. Is one of the reasons why you're continuing to write pieces so that you have a life outside of your television life? You know, a writing life outside of television?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just it's a terrible thing to say, but I really enjoy writing them. And there, as we were discussing, there's not a lot of writing on the show that in the sense of the deft use of language. And
yeah,
this is another kind of writing that is just wonderful to do. And these are, I've been lucky, and I now can write for wonderful places where they treat you with great kindness and respect and make you a better writer than you actually are.
Randy Cohn, thanks a lot.
My pleasure.